Welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Hello, dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And you can always find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Good Pods, Pandora. Wherever you listen to your podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As for our social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube as Let's Talk Micro, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza, and I have an email address which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any feedback, any topic suggestions. They are always welcome and appreciated. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. Thank you so much for the support. And one of the goals, of course, of Let's Talk Micro is always to continue bringing information, right? Continue bringing more content. So if you want to support the podcast in any way, Let's Talk Micro does not have any sponsors. So if you want to support the podcast in any way, you can do so by a Venmo link, which is included in the show notes, or by buying a coffee, ko-fi. Link is also provided in the show notes. And thank you. You know, if you whatever you want to give is fine. It just, you know, it helps the podcast. So I can maybe continue going to conferences and bring more content. And of course, if you're looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, and they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. These are great resources from Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a very passionate pharmacist, you know, who's involved in ID stewardship, and actually he was the guest on the last podcast. So if you haven't checked out the previous episode, please go ahead and do so. So in the episode, you know, Timothy Gauthier, you know, he joined the podcast and we talked about many things, you know, and one of them was we talked about stewardship, you know, antimicrobial stewardship, defining it, you know, what it is. We also talk about antibiograms, and he talks about the difference between a regular antibiogram and a hospital antibiogram. You know, he talks about if there are any tools to help you compile this information. And I also ask questions about organisms and what antibiotics are generally used to treat them. Keeping in mind, of course, you know, that these are general statements and you know, we're taking things in account, like if the organism is fairly susceptible. But I just ask about scenarios, like, for example, you know, in a urine culture, if you have an Enterobacteriale, what do you normally treat with? What do you treat with if you have, let's say, Staphylococcus aureus in a blood culture? So he gives those answers. He also talks about his websites, which are, you know, learnantibiotics.com and idstewardship.com, what kind of information you can find in either of those websites. And of course, he talks about his book, Learn Antibiotics, which is available on Amazon. So it was a very great episode. Dr. Gauthier, you know, is very passionate. And that's always very refreshing. He's very involved, right? We talked about that in the podcast, you know. I'm passionate about micro. I do it. I spread information through my podcast. You know, he does it through his websites, through his book. So he is definitely actively involved in sharing information, you know, talking about his passion. So that's always great in this profession. So I was very happy to have Dr. Gauthier in the podcast. And I look forward to any future episodes where he can return as a guest. But definitely, if you haven't checked out this episode, please go ahead and do so. And before I move on to today's episode, I just want to say something real quick. And previously, I have talked about the American Society for Clinical Laboratory Science, which is ASCLS. And the ASCLS, you know, they have different chapters, many chapters throughout the United States. For example, you know, there's the Florida chapter, there's the Virginia chapter. And recently, I had the opportunity to be a speaker in the ASCLS Virginia meeting. And this meeting was held in Radford University, in Radford, Virginia. And they have an MLS program. And I was invited to this meeting as a speaker to talk about the tools and resources in the clinical microbiology lab. You know, it was a great talk in front of a live audience, and it went well. You know, I was a little nervous, but it went well. And so it was great. People are very friendly. Everyone was great. So I met great people. So I had a great time. You know, I was there for like 2 days. So shout out to Laura Link, who's the program director for the MLS program at Radford University. And shout out to Christine Angelini, fellow microbiologist and medical lab scientist and educator. I just, you know, thank you so much for your attention. Everyone was great, but the two of you, you know, you were amazing. So thank you for having me again. You know, I'm so grateful. So that brings us to today's episode. So there is no guest, but it's just me talking about a bug. So if this is the type of episode that you like, then definitely this is great for you. And if not, if you prefer the guest episodes, you know, I kind of hope you stay and listen to this and share it with other people. This is great content, especially, you know, if you're learning about the organisms, and it can be used as a quick refresher. Today, I am talking about gram-positive rods, and to be more specific, Corynebacterium. The last time that I did an episode about an organism, it was about Listeria, and those were episodes 131 and 132. There is also a series about bacillus, which are episodes 75 through 77. On the episodes about Listeria, you know, I start talking about the organism, gram stain, biochemicals, diseases, and then I move on to media. And the one with bacillus, you know, I start talking about the same thing, you know, always starting with the organism, the species, biochemicals, media. And I ended with an episode about bacillus and thraces. So overall, this is great content. So if you haven't checked out any of them, please go ahead and do so. So Corynebacterium, they are catalase positive, gram-positive rods. They are non-spore-forming, and they are aerobic and facultative anaerobic. The genus of Corynebacterium, along with other genera, are considered coryneiform bacteria. So these are short or slightly curved rods, which are arranged in palisades. They are club-shaped, and actually, coryne means club in ancient Greek. One term that you hear with this type of arrangement is Chinese letters. So, right, this is something that we hear in school when we are learning, going through the program. So, other genera that are coryneiform, they are Arthrobacter, Brevibacterium, Dermabacter, Microbacterium, and Turricella, among others. These other genera may be isolated in medical device-associated infections. And, of course, you know, we have students in the audience, so I think this is a good time to kind of just pause a little bit and talk about the different morphologies and arrangements. So when we think about gram-positive cocci, right, we think about arrangements like clusters, chains, pairs. And with morphology, you know, maybe we think about like lancet shape when it comes to Streptococcus pneumoniae. And when it comes to gram-positive rods, you know, one arrangement that we are discussing here, you know, it is the palisades. And when it comes to morphology, by now, right, we talked about bacillus, which are large gram-positive rods, and you hear the term box used with them. And some have spores, right, and we talked about that and the staining and some tests that you can use to see the spores. Overall, you know, when you talk about spores, you see like a clearing because it doesn't take the stain. And then you have Listeria, which are like the short gram-positive rods. So here, we are talking about gram-positive rods that are kind of like in a V shape or an L shape. So it's like a very distinctive morphology if you compare it with the other gram-positive rods. We haven't done an episode about lactobacillus yet, but typically those tend to be like long and thin. So this is something good to keep in mind. As you are going through your organisms, you're preparing for your test, you know, like for your board exam. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, we get questions like case studies. And if we see little things that help us, you know, it might help us, you know, like narrow down the answer to it. So definitely if you see coryneiform, V-shape, Chinese letters, you know, these are things that you might see in that question. It can help you, narrow down the answer. And it can make you, you know, it starts you thinking about Corynebacterium, so keep that in mind. The genus Corynebacterium has 105 species, with about 56 of them causing human infection. One notable member of this genus is C. diphtheria. Other species that are seen in nosocomial infections are Corynebacterium urolyticum on UTIs, Corynebacterium amygdalatum, and Corynebacterium striatum. Definitely one term you hear with some of the organisms in this genus is dipteroids. and these are species recovered from clinical specimens but deemed non-pathogenic. So it is like a collective term. And those of you that work in the lab, you know, you're familiar with this, and right, you're evaluating your culture, and you see like some white colonies, you do a gram stain, and you see like the V-shaped Chinese letters, gram-positive rods, catalase positive, and then you go ahead and call it diptyroids. You know, so it's like a collective term, kind of like a non-pathogenic Neisseria, where you bunch up some organisms, and you use that collective term. So typically non-pathogenic, we have a lot of cyanobacterium in our bodies, you know, as part of the microbiota. So those type of species, you know, we just report them as diptyroids. If we do any type of reporting, you know, sometimes, you know, they can go in under normal skin flora, for example. Now, according to the Manual of Clinical Microbiology of the American Society for Microbiology, ASM, and the manual is the MCM, there are about 50 species that are not clinically relevant for humans, to humans. They are recovered from food, the environment, and animals. When it comes to pathogenicity, it can be difficult to establish it with cyanobacterium because a lot of the species are recovered in the environment and are part of the flora of the microbiota. So this is something, right? So we have a lot of it growing in our bodies, so it can be a little difficult to establish if that is the agent causing the infection. So when it comes to this, you know, there are some recommendations. And these are the cruciform bacteria that's isolated from sterile sources, like body fluids, you know, cerebrospinal fluid, blood culture, but for multiple specimens, be identified to the species level. And those of you that work with blood cultures, you know that typically you see gram-positive rods in one set, and it's pretty much, you know, a contaminant. You don't do any susceptibilities. You may be, you know, identified to a generic level. But if you start seeing it in more than one bottle, you know, more than one collection, then, you know, it is recommended that you identify it to the species level. And in that case, you know, that being that if you have it in multiple blood culture sets, you know, your laboratory, you know, likelihood, you know, will have you do susceptibilities on it as well. Because it's kind of, it's less of a contamination and it's potentially the agent causing the infection because you're seeing it in more than one set. Other recommendations to identify it to a species level are, you know, when you obtain them from deep wounds or implanted prosthetic devices, if they are the predominant organism. If the specimen is from a urine culture, it is recommended to identify it if the organism has a count of greater than 10,000 colonies per milliliter or the predominant organism with a count of 100,000 colonies per milliliter. For respiratory samples, if pneumonia is suspected and this is the sole or predominant organism, it is recommended to identify it. So keep this in mind when you're working up cultures. You know, a lot of times, you know, as we mentioned, since it is part of the flora, we see it mixed up with other organisms. So the recommendations are when you have sterile body fluids or when you get a certain count or if it's like the predominant organism, or the only one growing there. And, you know, this is a great example when it comes to like urine cultures, for example, and I'll talk more about some species, but Cyanobacterium urolyticum, which you can see it in urinary tract infections. When you see it in UTIs, you know, when it's pretty much causing the UTI, you tend to see it pure. So normally you get urine cultures, right, and they're mixed with lactobacillus, maybe a little bit of CNS, some diptyroids. But when you get to the point that maybe that's the agent causing the infection, you see it pretty much growing in a predominant or pure growth. So keep that in mind before you go reporting all the species of Cyanobacterium. Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about media. So Cyanobacterium, you know, they grow on blood, chocolate, and PEA. So pretty much, you know, the media that you use for your regular gram-positive grow on. There are some species that do not grow on chocolate agar, and some species are lipophilic. For example, Cyanobacterium jacum, urolyticum, and acculens, among others. This species produce larger colonies when they are cultured in blood agar, supplemented with 1% tween 80. When it comes to Cyanobacterium diphtheria, there are other media which I will talk about more in more detail. So, cyanobacterium, it grows at 35 to 37 degrees in either ambient air or CO2. And while we are talking about colonies and growth, you know, I just want to take a quick minute to talk about colony morphology. And, you know, it varies with the species. You can have anything from like on the larger side, white colonies, gray colonies, when it comes to, let's say, cyanobacterium striatum, acculans. And then you can have smaller colonies when it comes to jacum, which, you know, on the plate, it looks like a little bit of irregular looking. So it means that it kind of looks like, you know, they're growing weakly a little bit. And it gives you like the look that the plate, it's like slightly mixed. And then you have your ilicum, where you get like more, definitely smaller colonies, more sometimes, you know, like the pinpoint growing slowly. So it can be varied, but you can have anything from small, large colonies, and they're typically white to gray. So keep that in mind, and something very important, right, for you technologists out there, students, and you just started working on the bench, white colonies does not mean that they are gram-positive cocci. Sometimes, you know, techs make that mistake, and you're working on the bench, and you see white colonies that are not growing on McConkie, and you assume that they are cocci, and you proceed that way, and that's a mistake. White colonies can be gram-positive rods, and they can be yeast also. So make sure that when you see white colonies, you do a gram stain. And granted, with repetition, we definitely get used to some morphologies, and we learn, for example, like coagulase negative staff, and you have this distinctive morphologies, you know, like with coag negative staff, you have like these flat colonies, flat large colonies. But definitely, when in doubt, when unsure, if you have white colonies, gray colonies, please go ahead and do a gram stain. And this can provide you with the direction of what you need to do, whether it be, you know, if it's yeast, if it needs a further ID, if it needs susceptibilities, whether it's gram-positive rods, and maybe you can call it normal skin flora. So just take the time and do a quick gram stain. When it comes to biochemicals, there's catalase, which, like I said, you know, it is positive. Other recommended biochemicals and tests are motility, urea hydrolysis, acetylene hydrolysis, fermentation, and oxidation. There is also acid production from glucose, maltose, sucrose, mannitols, and xylose. And of course, you know, if you want to learn more about urea, I did an episode with some great information, which is episode 15 of the podcast. That is 15. So please go ahead and check it out if you haven't already. Okay, so now that we have gone over media and biochemicals, let's go ahead and talk about some species. So I'm going to start with Cyanobacterium diphtheriae. Humans carry C. diphtheriae, and in rare cases, it is isolated from humans. It is primarily transmitted through respiratory secretions or skin lesions. The disease caused by this organism is diphtheria, but it is only caused by strains that produce the diphtheria toxin. And there is a gene for this toxin, which is called the tox gene. And organisms acquire it by viral transduction. This gene blocks protein synthesis in human cells, which causes the cells to die. It is extremely lethal, and something, you know, I want to emphasize, not all strains of C. diphtheria produce the toxin. According to the MCM, C. diphtheria, C. ulcerans, and C. pseudotuberculosis are the only species that are able to harbor the bacteriophage which carries the tox gene. C. ulcerans and C. pseudotuberculosis are zoonotic, and C. pseudotuberculosis can cause lymphadenitis in humans. And in the MCM, and actually I'm using the 12th edition, but it's actually a more recent one, it has a flowchart on how to proceed with suspect C. diphtheriae versus other cyanobacteria. So it guides you to the steps, you know, you're doing the testing. If you get an idea of C. diphtheria, you know what to do for the toxin testing and everything. So if you have the MCM, definitely check it out. And like I said, you know, it is transmitted by respiratory secretions like coughing and sneezing, or by coming to close contact with secretions close to the infected site. It commonly infects the respiratory system and symptoms include weakness, sore throat, fever, and swollen glands in the neck. And the toxin, you know, it kills healthy cells. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention website, the CDC, within 2 to 3 days, this dead tissue forms a gray coating that can build up in the throat or nose. And this causes the patient to have a hard time breathing or swallowing. And the term used for this membrane is called a pseudomembrane. So students, remember this, you know, when you are taking your tests and you are always, you know, looking at those questions and trying to find something in the question that helps you maybe narrow down the possible answer. If your case study, you know, has gram-positive rods and it mentions a pseudomembrane, if the toxin spreads through the blood, it can induce systemic organ damage, leading to cardiac arrest. Other infections are skin infections, which can cause ulcers or sores. However, they rarely result in severe disease. As I mentioned before, there is media used for the isolation of cyanobacteria and diphtheria, and these are cysteine telluride agar, modified Tinsdale agar, and Loeffler medium. And I will talk more about these in the next episode. So let's go ahead and do a quick recap of the episode. So cyanobacterium, gram-positive rods, catalase-positive, aerobic and facultative anaerobic. They are in part of the, you know, a lot of the species are part of the normal microbiota. So that kind of, you know, makes it difficult to pinpoint if they're the causative agent of the infection. But we do have some species that are seen in some infections, like cyanobacterium urolyticum, which is seen in urinary tract infections, and definitely cyanobacterium diphtheriae, which it can be seen in respiratory infection or in skin infections. And keep in mind that when it comes to cyanobacterium diphtheriae in respiratory infections, you know, at that point in time, they're not as common. So if you're seeing this presentation and you probably have a gram-positive rod that is growing predominantly or pretty much the only thing growing on the plate, and in that case, you know, you might suspect this. Of course, you know, if the physician sees the pseudomembrane, that definitely, you know, narrows it down. But keep in mind that not all the species of cyanobacterium diphtheriae, they have the toxin. So besides that, there are two other species that can have the toxin, which are cyanobacterium pseudotuberculosis and cyanobacterium ulcerans. So they can harbor that gene. So you can have a species of cyanobacterium diphtheria, but it's not causing diphtheria because it does not have the gene for the toxin. So keep that in mind. And as I mentioned, when it comes to it, as being the possible pathogen, you have some guidelines where it's either, you know, growing predominantly, or when it comes to like urine cultures, for example, you know, you have greater than 10,000 colonies per ml if it's the only organism. And if it is the predominant one, you have over 100,000 colonies per ml. And a lot of times when you're working in the bench and you see cyanobacterium, you know, they tend to be part of the normal flora, so they're mixed with other organisms. And you have a term that is dipteroids, which is, you know, some species that typically, you know, they're non-pathogenic. And you collectively refer to them as dipteroids. So keep that in mind. And as far as media, they pretty much normally grow in the same media that gram-positive cocci grow in. So you can see it in blood and chocolate, with some exceptions. And then there's other media that you can use for cyanobacterium diphtheriae. But overall, you know, most species of cyanobacterium, they're great players when it comes to growing in their regular standard bacteriology media. And that, my dear audience, it's the end of this episode. I hope you enjoy learning about cyanobacterium. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. Stay tuned. Great things coming your way. If you haven't checked out the episode of Dr. Timothy Gauthier, please go ahead and do so. And there's also a lot of episodes to choose from. So I invite you to share it with a friend, with a coworker, with a student. Let them know that Let's Talk Micro is out there. that it is a resource that you can use. And if you have any questions, definitely, you know, always reach out via social media or via email. Thank you so much for the support. I appreciate it. As always, continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. So, as always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time. Bye.